Hi, welcome to the Frihof Institute of Progressive Halakha. I'm Rabbi Mark Wyshovsky with the 12-minute shiur number 21, the Sukkah, Why Size Matters. We're working from a source sheet that you can download at our website, www.frihofinstitute.org/learning, and then scroll down to the 12-minute shiur. When we think about the specifications of a sukkah, we generally focus on the schach, the materials we use to build its roof. But there is another question, this one having to do with dimensions. How large or small must a sukkah be? The halakha doesn't specify an ideal size for a sukkah, but it does impose some limits. And that's our focus in this shiur. We'll begin with the question of height. In the very first Mishnah of Tractate Sukkah, lines 3-9 on the source sheet, we read, Sukkah shehi gavoa lemala me'esrim ama pesula, Rabbi Yehuda makshir. A sukkah that is taller than 20 cubits is defective. What's 20 cubits? Well, it's about 31.5 feet or 9.6 meters. But please don't flame us about the arithmetic. These are approximate figures. We're not absolutely sure about them, but they're close enough. Okay? If the sukkah is taller than that, taller than 31.5 feet, it's defective. It's pasul, psula, but Rabbi Yehuda rules that it is kashera, that it is valid. And v'she'ena gevoa asra tfachim, if its height is less than 10 tefachim, or hand breadths, and that's about 90 centimeters or 3 feet, it is defective. Rabbi Ovadia Mibartanura summarizes the Talmud's logic behind these measurements in his classic commentary to the Mishnah. It's on lines 14 through 22. Sukkah shehi gevoa lemala me'esrim ama psula de sukkah dirat arai ba'inan. Because a sukkah must be a temporary dwelling. That's why it can't be larger than 20 cubits. As it is written in Deuteronomy chapter 16, Chag ha-sukkot ta'aseh lecha shivat yamim. You shall make or celebrate or observe the Sukkot festival for 7 days. The Torah instructs us, says the Midrash, make or build a sukkah to last for 7 days. Not longer than that, just for 7 days. Anything taller than 20 cubits would qualify as a dirat keva, a permanent dwelling. Okay? So why then does Rabbi Yehuda accept a sukkah of that height? Well, back to Bartnura, lines 24 through 27. Disaval sukkah dirat keva ba'inan. Rabbi Yehuda rules that such a sukkah is acceptable because he holds that a sukkah need not be a temporary dwelling. In fact, it should be a permanent dwelling. And the halakha, says Bartnura, does not follow Rabbi Yehuda. And why must a sukkah be at least 10 hand breadths in height, no smaller than that? Well, lines 29 through 32, Bartnura again. V'she'ena gavoa asara tfachim psula. If its height is less than 10 handbreadths, it is defective because people don't live in such a foul dwelling place where you'd have to squat down just to enter and squat just to sit there. Nobody lives like that. And remember, we defined the mitzvah to dwell, leshev basukkah, in accordance with the sukkah's livability. Teshvu ke'en taduru, in the language of the Talmud, you dwell in the sukkah the way you live in your permanent dwelling. You wouldn't live in a house that's only 3 feet tall, so you don't dwell in a sukkah like that either. So much for the height of the sukkah. Well, what about its area, the amount of space it takes up? Well, the Shulchan Aruch, lines 35 through and 37, brings the halakha that while there is no upper limit to the area of a sukkah, you can make it as large as you want, as long as its walls are less than 20 cubits tall, it must be at least 7 by 7 tfachim, or hand breadths, in area. The reason why, as explained by the Mishnah Berurah, lines 41 through 44, is that this rather constricted space is the minimum necessary to include one's head, the majority of one's body, and at least a tiny bit of a table, a tefach, a handbreadth of a table, within the sukkah, that is, underneath the schach. The requirement, of course, is that we eat in the sukkah, so the minimal sukkah has to be large enough to allow one person to do just that. The situation, of course, is that the sukkah is built right around the doorway of the house, or maybe on a narrow balcony or mirpeset, where there isn't a lot of space. This halakha goes all the way back to Mishnah Sukkah chapter 2, that's in lines 49 through 61 on the source sheet. Mi shehaya rosho v'rubo basukah v'shulchano b'toch habayit, Beit Shammai poslin u'Beit Hillel makshirin. If the sukkah is large enough to encompass one's head and most of one's body, while one's table remains inside the house, Beit Shammai rules it psula, defective, while Beit Hillel accept it as valid or kasherah. At this point, the Mishnah breaks into a conversation between the scholars of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai over a ma'aseh, a case that happened in the past. Amru lahen Beit Hillel v'Beit Shammai lo kach haya ma'aseh. The scholars of Beit Hillel said to their colleagues, the scholars of Beit Shammai, don't you remember the case? When the elders of Beit Shammai and the elders of Beit Hillel visited Rabbi Yochanan ben Achorani, they found him sitting in a sukkah large enough to encompass rosho v'rubo, to encompass his head and most of his body, v'shulchano b'toch habayit, but his table remained inside the house. Yet they didn't say anything to him. So the scholars of Beit Hillel are citing this case as a precedent to support their position that such a sukkah is kasherah. But the scholars of Beit Shammai replied, Misham ra'ya, you call that proof? They, that is, the elders of both houses, actually said to him, if this is your practice, im kein hayit noheg, lo kiyamta mitzvat sukkah miyamecha, you have never fulfilled the mitzvah of sukkah. Now, 2 points to note here. First, what are the two schools arguing about? The Talmud, in lines 66 through 69, tells us that mid'oraita, as far as the Torah itself is concerned, both schools hold that a sukkah need be big enough to contain only one's head and most of one's body, while the table can remain entirely within the house. Beit Shammai thinks that the ancient rabbis added to this Torah law a stringency. They made a gezerah that the table needs to be at least partway underneath the schach, shema yimshach achar shulchano, lest one be drawn after one's table. That is, while eating, you might bend over the table so that you actually eat under the roof of the house and not in the sukkah, and therefore you wouldn't fulfill the mitzvah. So, as a precautionary measure, Beit Shammai says the ancient rabbis made this rule that at least part of the table has to be in the sukkah. Beit Hillel, meanwhile, thinks that the rabbis imposed no such requirement. They weren't worried that one would lean over the table, so that the sukkah may conform to the even smaller dimensions as set by Torah law. The second point is that the halakha here follows the more stringent Beit Shammai and not the more lenient Beit Hillel, which is odd because we know it's not supposed to be that way. I mean, we remember the famous text in Eruvin 13b, that's on lines 72 through 93, when a bat kol, a heavenly voice, settled a long dispute between the two schools over halachic supremacy with the famous dictum, Elu ve'elu divrei Elohim chayim, both sets of opinions are the words of the living God, the halacha kedivrei Beit Hillel, the halacha is in accord with Beit Hillel. Now the text in the Talmud responds to that divine decision with the obvious kasha, V'chi, me'achar she'elu ve'elu divrei Elohim chayim, mipnei ma zachu Beit Hillel likbo halacha kemotan. If both sets of opinions are the words of the living God, if they are equally true, why then did Beit Hillel merit that the halacha be established according to their view? The answer, of course, is that the scholars of Beit Hillel were gentle and self-effacing. That is, they conducted themselves with humility. How so? Well, they taught the opinions of Beit Shammai along with their own, and when they did so, they would always state Beit Shammai's ruling first, which is exactly what they do in our Mishnah when they tell that story back on lines 56 and 57. Don't you remember the case when the elders of Beit Shammai and then the elders of Beit Hillel visited Rabbi Yochanan ben Ochorani, etc.? And as the Erevin passage concludes, Lilamedcha shakol hamashpil atzmo hakadosh baruch hu magbiho, teaching us basically that God rewards the humble. Okay, fine. But if so, why doesn't the halacha follow Beit Hillel here in this case? I mean, they're the humble ones. How come the halacha follows Beit Shammai? Well, we think it has to do precisely with the humility of Beit Hillel. Remember that the two schools are not so much debating halacha as they are debating history. Just what did our teachers tell Rabbi Yochanan when they visited him at his itty-bitty sukkah? And just what did the ancient rabbis decree or not decree about the size of a sukkah? The halacha follows Beit Shammai in this case because Beit Shammai remembers the story accurately. Both schools told Rabbi Yochanan that his sukkah was too small. And Beit Hillel says, you know what? We got the tradition wrong, and you got it right. Our bad. We acknowledge your opinion as the correct one. As we know, intellectuals, scholars in all disciplines, do not always display such humility. But we also know that inquiry, the search for truth in all disciplines, fares better, is healthier, when scholars are prepared to question their own opinions, admit their mistakes, and learn from others. That should be the case when it comes to the study of halacha. Yet we know that there are those halachic scholars who insist that they have a monopoly on truth, that their version of the tradition, they call it the Mesorah or the Mesorah, is the exclusively correct one, so that all other versions, all other interpretations are necessarily wrong and even heretical. We in the field of progressive halakha don't imagine that we can persuade them otherwise, but we wish that they would consider the possibility that they could be wrong, that, like Beit Hillel, they don't always remember the tradition accurately, that at least sometimes they don't get it right. That's the attitude that we try to take anyway. And if all students of halakha would approach their work in that spirit of humility, well, we think it would be a lot easier for all of us to dwell together in our metaphorical sukkah, which would be large enough to encompass every one of us. This has been the 12-Minute Shiur number 21 from the Frihof Institute of Progressive Halakha. Thanks for learning with us. Lehitraot.